This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
A blue inflatable kiddie pool sat in the garage of a Hollywood Hills rental home. It had cuts in it. Not tears from water, lots of playing on a hot summer afternoon. Cuts. Scalpeled. And straight. Made with some kind of sharp object. You know, the things you shouldn't have around a kiddie pool. And pieces were missing from those cuts. An LAPD trace analyst named Lisa Lehendro, over 20 years on the job, examined that pool. Then she examined the clothing recovered with the remains of 14-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez. And the missing fragments from the pool were on her leggings, on the remains. That is what day three of the preliminary hearing against David, D4VD, put into the record in a Los Angeles courtroom. David Anthony Burke, the singer known as David, is charged with first-degree murder with special circumstances, illegal acts involving a minor under 14, and mutilation of human remains. You know, another Tuesday in the music world. He has pled not guilty. His defense team says they will vigorously defend his innocence. Okay, well, that's good. How is he innocent? How? The hearing in front of Judge Ometo is expected to run another few days. This is our breakdown of day three. A bind-over ruling. The decision on whether Burke stands trial, I mean, that really could come at any point. So as of this recording, we haven't reached it yet. That doesn't mean that it hasn't happened. We will certainly bring it to you as it does. But we're breaking things down so you get a full picture of these hearings that lead up to the judge saying, yes, this is going to trial, or no, I don't think so. And on day three, two things happened. The prosecution connected the garage to the body through physical evidence you can hold in your hand. And the defense showed you exactly where they're going as well. Investigators also found jugs of fake blood in that garage. Because if you didn't have enough when you chainsawed your girlfriend, a little extra, you know, in case Halloween comes around and you're out. The defense has an explanation for those, and a detective testified about three separate drives Burke allegedly took to the same stretch of highway in Santa Barbara County, the same stretch where Celeste's passport card was later found in the dirt. Coincidence. Could have been anywhere. The wind, the seagull, a stork delivering a baby. A stork delivered a baby down the road, Judge, and then he picked up her card and they just happened to go around the same route. There's an in and out down that way. They both like to go that way. The stork that picked up the card and David, it's all a big, big misunderstanding. Whoopsie woo. Let him go back on tour, right? No. Lehendro took the stand and walked through what she found inside the blue inflatable pool from the garage. You're never going to think of children's pools the same again after this. I'm sorry. Hair fibers, plant material, black foam-like fragments. The pool had been cut apart with something sharp, and the pieces that were removed didn't end up in a dumpster. They ended up on a dead girl. Many of the fragments were recovered from Celeste's leggings. The fragments were small, the kind of physical evidence you don't see without a crime lab. But they draw a line between two pieces that should have nothing to do with each other. A garage in the Hollywood Hills and the remains of a 14-year-old girl from Lake Elsinore. The prosecution doesn't need a witness who saw what happened in that garage. They don't need a confession. They have plastic. Tiny pieces of a blue inflatable pool that traveled from the garage to the body. Lehendra's testimony connects the cutting of the pool to the clothing Celeste was wearing when her remains were also recovered and cut. That connection doesn't depend on anyone's story. It depends on a microscope. Lauren Wallace, another LAPD criminalist who had stated her testimony, or rather started her testimony the day before and continued on day three. She testified about searching the Hollywood Hills rental where Burke had been living. What she found in the garage went beyond the pool. There were indications throughout the space that blood had been cleaned up, real blood, scrubbed from surfaces in a garage that also held an inflatable pool with chunks cut out of it. Prosecutors allege that Burke dismembered Celeste's body in that garage. The garage wasn't messy. It was actually clean. Someone scrubbed blood off those surfaces and left the pool behind. I know. It's like, what? Were this stupid? Then a third criminalist, Samantha Tosh, testified that blood and DNA samples collected from Burke's Tesla and the rented home matched Celeste's DNAs, not a partial match, not a statistical likelihood, a match. The car, the house, the body, all linked through DNA recovered in the investigation. This is getting more slam dunky every day. So here's where things stood heading into the defense's cross-examination. The prosecution had pool fragments on the clothing found with Celeste's remains. They had cleaned up blood in the garage. They had DNA from the Tesla and the house matching Celeste's, three independent threads, physical trace evidence, cleanup evidence, and DNA all pointing at the same garage, the same car, the same person's home. And then Blair Burke stood up. Burke is one of the most prominent defense attorneys in Los Angeles. She represents high-profile clients. She has handled cases with the kinds of media pressure like this before. And her cross-examination on day three wasn't subtle about what she's building towards. She spent her time on the stand with Lauren Wallace, asking one kind of question over and over and over and over. Poking holes. It's her job. Not knocking her at all. She's a good defense attorney. What was the question being asked over and over 5,000 different ways? What didn't you test? Two small chainsaws sat in that garage. So did a mini saw. Wallace testified that initial chemical tests on the blade showed no signs of blood because there was no indication of blood. The handles were never swabbed for DNA. The saws were screened. They came back clean and the investigation moved on. Burke did not move on. She zeroed in on the gap between a negative blood test and a DNA swab that was never performed. If an item has somebody else's DNA on it, you wouldn't be able to see that at the time, she said. Wallace agreed. No, you're not able to see touch DNA. But that doesn't preclude at all that there could be somebody else's touch DNA, Burke pressed. Wallace agreed again. You know, it's finding little, well, it could be this, right? Well, I mean, yes, and there might be aliens too. It's probably more likelihood of that than this being someone other than David responsible. Then came the question that tells you the entire defense strategy is a single, basically tells you the whole defense strategy, I would say in a single sentence. Burke asked Wallace, were you aware that multiple people lived at that residence? Wallace said yes. That exchange is the defense case in miniature. Someone else lived in that house. Someone else had access to that garage. Someone else could have touched those tools. And the police never checked. The handles went unswabbed. The blades tested negative. And the investigation moved past them. Burke is building a narrative around what investigators chose not to do, which again is why you need to do thorough investigations. This is she's going for a reasonable doubt because the evidence is damning. And she's doing it in the preliminary hearing where the standard is bind over, or the standard for bind over is probable cause, not guilt, beyond a reasonable doubt. She's getting the gaps into the record early. Under redirect, the prosecution pushed back hard. Testing for the suspect's own DNA at his own residence wouldn't prove anything. Of course, Burke's DNA is everywhere in his own house. That's meaningless. Burke fired right back. You knew other people lived there too. Yeah, but again, meaningless. That gap, the untested handles, the unswabbed tools, the other residents, is the space Burke is going to try to build a defense inside of. And good luck with that. For a moment, It has some weight. The chainsaws are clean. The handles were never tested. Other people had access. If you freeze the testimony right there, you might start wondering whether the investigation moved too fast and missed something. But the prosecution didn't need the chainsaws. They have the pool. They have the DNA. They have the cleanup. The chainsaws are the trees Burke wants the jury to focus on. The prosecution's case is the forest. And in that same garage, jugs of fake blood. Wallace testified that she found jugs of fake blood in the garage. Burke's strategy with them was clear through the way she questioned the witnesses. Burke used the fake blood for music videos, his online persona, an alter ego called Itami. It trades in dark, violent imagery. What a great image when you're going to trial. His breakthrough single was called Romantic Homicide. It has over a billion plays on Spotify. His debut album, Withered, dropped 2 days after prosecutors alleged Celeste was killed. The defense needs the jury to see that garage as a creative workspace, a studio where a young artist with a massive online following made content that required props, fake blood, inflatable pools, tools. The prosecution's answer is in the same room. Real blood, clean from surfaces, in the same garage where the fake blood sat on the shelf next to a pool with chunks cut out of it and fragments matching a dead girl's clothing. A garage can be a studio. A garage can also be a crime scene. The physical evidence tells you which one it was. The defense music video explanation has to survive that contrast, and it has to survive it at trial in front of a jury who will also see Lejandro's fragment analysis and Tasha's DNA match. Could it be a studio and a murder cell? Yeah, both at the same time. Do it Tuesday with one, and it's a pre-trial run, and then you actually do the real thing on Wednesday, you know? Then the testimony shifted from the garage to the road. Detective William Roker specializes in technology analysis for the LAPD. He took the stand on day three and laid out cell tower data and vehicle tracking that placed Burke's movements across two counties. The data showed Burke's Tesla Model X and his cell phone traveled together from the Hollywood Hills to Santa Barbara County on April 23rd and 24th. That Tesla is the same car where Celeste's remains were later found in the front trunk. April 23rd to 25 is the date prosecutors allege she was killed. He didn't just drive there. He drove through a specific corridor near Highway 154 in Santa Barbara County, roughly 95 miles northwest of his house. It's the same stretch of road where the highway worker later found Celeste's passport card. Get rid of this. Good thinking, David. You're really good at this, aren't you? Records also showed that Burke charged his electric vehicle in Santa Ynez around the same time. That detail matters because it places the car and the charging activity in the geographic window the prosecution is building around. The EV charging station is a timestamp and a location rolled into one. It's hard evidence that the car was in that area, drawn from a system Burke had no reason to think anyone would ever examine. Then Rucker testified about what came after April 23rd. Burke went back. Records show two additional trips to the same area in May. Three drives total to the same remote stretch of highway spread across multiple weeks. The defense's somebody else argument runs into a bit of a wall there. It's not just the garage. It's not just the pool, the DNA, and the cleanup. It's the road. Three trips to the same corridor, all tracked through Burke's phone and Burke's car. Starting on the night, prosecutors allege Celeste died. Whatever happened in that garage, someone drove that Tesla to Santa Barbara County three times in the weeks that followed, and every trip tracked to Burke's own devices. The motive isn't a mystery. Celeste had already grown jealous of Burke's relationships with other women. Prosecutors allege she threatened to expose him and destroy his music career, a career an Interscope Records executive valued at $13 to $19 million under oath earlier in the hearing. That's the financial gain special circumstance on the murder charge. The prosecution also alleged Burke sent a car to pick Celeste up on the night of April 23rd, 25. She arrived at his Hollywood Hills home, and according to prosecutors, she was never heard from again. Her body was found months later in the frunk of that same Tesla. The car had been abandoned in the Hollywood Hills. Neighbors reported it sitting on the street for over a month before it was finally towed. When criminals finally got inside, They counted at least 11 air fresheners. Console, front trunk, scattered through the car. Still smelled like decompositions. No amount of little Christmas trees that you're going to put in there, they're going to fix that. There were insects inside the trunk as well. The medical examiner listed Celeste's cause of death as multiple penetrating injuries caused by an object or objects. She sat in that car for months. And according to prosecutors, a man who put her there kept touring, kept performing, kept making music under the name David while her remains decomposed in the front trunk of a Tesla abandoned on a residential street. The hearing continues. The judge has to decide whether there's probable cause to send Burke to trial. Blair Burke got real concessions on day three. The chainsaw handles were never swabbed. The exterior of the Tesla was never tested for DNA. Those are legitimate gaps in the evidence collection, and Burke made sure the record reflects every one of them. But gaps in what police didn't test only carry weight at a trial if the jury stops looking at what the police actually found. And what they found is a kiddie pool with chunks cut out of it in the garage, where blood had been scrubbed from the surfaces, fragments from that pool on the leggings of a dead 14-year-old girl, DNA matching her in the Tesla and the house, the car that drove to the same remote corridor in Santa Barbara County three times in the weeks after she allegedly died. Every trip logged to Burke's phone, every mile tracked. The defense wants you to look at the chainsaws. The prosecution wants you to stand in the garage and see everything else. Celeste Rivas Hernandez was 14 years old. She's from Lake Elsinore. She went to Burke's Hollywood Hills home on April 23rd of 25, and according to prosecutors, she was never heard from again. Her remains were found on September 8th, the day after what would have been her 15th birthday. Her family waited over a year for answers. The preliminary hearing that may lead to those answers is still ongoing. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage as we continue to watch this for you every single day. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as well. We'll continue our conversation over there. Links are in the description. Press subscribe wherever you're watching so you don't miss any of our coverage. We got a lot for you right here. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.